be worshipped. I want to be loved.
I've told you a million times not to talk to me when I'm doing my lashes.
Oh, it's you. I didn't know you with all your clothes on.
You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view.
What am I going to tell you? You look like a woman.
Well, girls, looks like it's back to the perfume counter for me. And by the way, there's a name for you ladies, but it isn't used in high society, outside of a kennel.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Goldwyn Girls. I am your co-host, Meredith, and as always, I am joined by the lovely Amelia. And today, we are actually also joined by someone called Dave. And he is an employee at a video store in New Zealand, which we are both, like, very into video stores and talking about all things related to that. So we're very excited to have him on. So I'm going to go ahead and throw it over to Amelia to go ahead and introduce our guest and to get into today's topic.
Cool. So basically my idea for this podcast, it's just like, I don't know, I thought that Dave was a really cool person and he has like a really unique job that's kind of dying out. And so I was like, let's talk to this person. And I have a personal background with video stores. Like I said, in Portland, we have Movie Madness. We used to have a bunch of other ones, but they've closed within the last year or so. And basically, it's Movie Madness is the last standing, unless you want to count the Blockbuster that's in Bend, Oregon. I don't count it. I don't even see it. It doesn't exist in my mind. You can also rent an Airbnb room, I guess, in the Blockbuster. Apparently, I saw that listed, but like that's the only good thing to do in Bend, probably. So, if you're there, you should probably do that. Bend is not a fun place. Anyway, I felt like I had to say that. As someone in Southern Oregon is scary. Anyway, but I wanted to recommend to our viewers, and we're going to have a lot of other recommendations to anything video store related or, you know, physical media related, that there's a documentary that I watched called At the Video Store by James Westby, and it's a beautiful documentary, and I'm saying that because, yes, I am biased. It takes place at Movie Madness. It has a lot of my friends in it that I've, like, grown up with and who have helped foster this love of movies and physical media with me. So I really recommend that, you know, before you listen to the podcast, after you listen to this podcast, that you check out that documentary. And also another plug, I brought them up before, but Museum of Home Video. They're a Twitch stream done by Brett, who is in charge of the ADFA programming. And it's just amazing. Brett has a great programming skill. Like, he just knows how to, like, put compilations of really odd, obscure, esoteric, like, videos together into one, like, mashed up hit. So if you're free Tuesday nights, join him on Twitch. He has a Twitch channel and a website. So go support them. And learn more about physical media. It's super important. And that's kind of one of the reasons that we wanted to do this podcast. And we're doing the Video Nasty series, obviously. Although, like, that takes place in the UK and not New Zealand. But, you know, we improvised. So there you go. So without further ado, I wanted to introduce Dave. Dave and I met on Twitter because I meet random people. And then I'm like, they're my best friends now. we met on film Twitter, basically. And he's a film lover, collector, physical media guru, video store employee master. And we just wanted to have him on the podcast to talk about his video store and his interest in film. So, hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey. Yeah, it's a beautiful morning here in Wellington, New Zealand. And I'm just really happy to be here talking with you guys.
Yeah, thanks for, like, joining us, especially with the time difference, which is pretty profound. And I thank you for also, like, no one can see this, obviously, because it's audio, but you're at work right now.
Yeah, I'm in the video store. Yeah.
Yeah. which is like, you know, you really pulled out all the stops for this. This podcast.
It makes a background too. Like, I was gonna say that earlier. I love the, like, it just, as in, the atmosphere is very good. I don't know. Atmosphere is the word I'm gonna use. It's very atmospheric.
How about the vibes?
Yeah. For people who can't,
that the viewers, that the listeners can't even see.
I know.
But you know, just pretend you're at a video store and you're smelling like must, and like, you know, it's just like you're like touching the covers and the spines of the titles, and just imagine, just close your eyes.
We need like ASMR, like video store ASMR or something. I don't know if we need that, but I need that. So anyway.
What would that sound like for you, Dave?
I could turn on the disc cleaner. sort of like a like a low hum. That might add a little bit of atmosphere, or a tape rewinder or something.
Yeah, I have never ran a disc cleaner, but it sounds really thrilling.
Yeah, it's very satisfying.
I bet.
I did like years ago. I feel like I used to do that for tapes, or it's a tape cleaner. Never mind. You know what? Oh my God.
It's okay, Meredith. We know you're an amateur.
I have big memories of that.
One of my colleagues refers to the disc resurfacer as a sander, which is really awkward in front of customers. He's always like, oh, that's got a bit of a scratch. Oh, don't worry, I'll sand it. Yeah, we've got a sander. Yeah, we'll just run the disc through the sander and we'll just sand it. Yeah. And I've looked it up and no one else calls it a sander. And he insists that it's the professional term, and it is so strange.
Yeah, I would get the wrong idea. I'd be like, do you have some like sanding paper back there, and you're just
yeah. No, it's a nice professional polisher. It does a smooth finish, not like a rough sand. Yeah.
So we kind of wanted to take it back from the beginning with your life. We wanted to go through your entire life. We want you to like, no. We were just basically wondering how you got interested in movies and physical media in general. You know, everyone has their origin story with that, and we're just kind of curious with yours.
Yeah, I suppose so. Watching movies was just sort of what my family did as a family activity. Usually, quite often action movies, so like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jean-Claude Van Damme, that sort of thing. We'd sort of gather around and watch those, or you know, all those kind of late 90s, early 2000s sort of odd films that came out. We'd just watch everything just as a family, and just going down to the video store was the family activity. And from there, I, like a lot of my friends, when DVDs sort of started coming down in price and becoming more popular, started buying a lot of DVDs. And also buying up a lot of tapes that people were selling off. And I've just always liked movies.
And would you say you have, like, at the moment, a large group of friends that kind of share that passion that you have?
Yeah, I've got a few friends that are kind of into collecting and things, and a lot of friends that are into movies. I mean, a lot of my friends I make through watching movies, you know. Shared interests and that sort of thing. So yeah, I've got a lot of friends who are either into movies like a little bit or a lot. I mean, yeah, I don't have many friends who like wouldn't go to the movies or anything like that, because what would we talk about?
Yeah, and I was wondering, so your just general love of movies kind of go to physical media, or did they just kind of happen at the same time or go hand in hand?
Yeah, it just went hand in hand. Like when I started buying films in the sort of early 2000s, I mean, that, you know, it was all physical media back then. So I've just kept going. And that's kind of expanded into, over time, that's kind of expanded to other formats. A lot of times as people have been getting rid of things, like my high school was throwing out some 16mm projectors, so I snapped those up. And then I had to find films for the projectors, and then it all just spirals out of control from there, you know.
Wow, my like school never gave way. Projectors, what the heck?
So cool.
Yeah. So I took home a couple of old education projectors, which are still what I've got to this day. And collected a bit of 16 from there. And then there was sort of this big revival in VHS collecting. You know, I don't have an amazing collection of VHS, but I've got just a lot of stuff, mostly that people were getting rid of, and a few things that I've sought out. And then from there, you know, then you start buying Laserdiscs Betamax, and yeah, it just all starts piling up. And then suddenly you're, you know, a cinema's getting rid of some 35mm, and then you're getting that. And at a certain point you just go, oh, well, I better get some more formats, you know, just keep this ball rolling.
Do you have a favorite format that you prefer collecting over another?
I really like film, so cine motion picture film. And just because of the size constraints of collecting 35mm, I've really started to love 16mm, because you know it's really fun to run on the projector, you get a good picture, and it's a lot easier to store than 35mm. So at the moment, yeah, I'm really becoming interested in 16. Yeah,
I totally relate to that, because I have a lot of 35, but like I'm running out of room in my closet, and so I'm like, I guess I'm just gonna collect 16 now. I don't think I have room for 35 anymore, which is sad. But
yeah, that's how I feel as well. But yeah, a friend of mine and I rent a storage container for 35mm, because it got a little bit out of control. We cleared out a collection and some random reels here and there, and a whole cinema that closed down in our city. We got all the films out from it. So now we store those, and sometimes we're lucky enough to run them. Neither of us have a 35mm projector set up at our houses, but there are a couple of cinemas that sometimes run our prints. So that's really fun when that happens. And so it's been very worthwhile, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah, I definitely think, like, especially with, you know, you have to have certain conditions to have the prints and store them. And I know a lot of people who have like giant storage units like full of films. But what you're saying is like my dream of going to a cinema that's closing and just like rescuing all the prints, and like, oh, that's so dreamy.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you'll get your opportunity. Like, if you just keep an eye out. There's always, unfortunately, cinemas closing, and a lot of older cinemas. Yeah. Even multiplexes have films just piled up. Or maybe it's more of a New Zealand thing. A lot of cinemas here were at the end of the line, where it wasn't worth sending films back to the distributor, so they were sent with, you know, hold, awaiting further instructions, and then those further instructions just never came. So there's a lot of rooms, often in the basement or upstairs in New Zealand cinemas, where there are just piles of prints sitting there. So there's still a lot of film out there.
I think, I don't know the exact like instructions that the projectionist, like at the time when they were switching between film and DCP, happened, or when some cinemas just closed because of that transition. But I know, like, they just never sent things back in the U.S., and they also just never, like, they just took it home. Like, when the cinema closed, like, everyone just took stuff home. I had a friend who I met when I worked at Target in Portland, and she was working in a theater in Utah, and it closed, and she was literally just throwing splicers and film in the back of her, like, trunk, and just, like, being like, I'm just gonna take it, because no one, everyone's throwing it away, so I guess I'll just take it all home. So it is pretty sad, like, that it does get to that point, like, where you're just kind of like, people are just throwing things away into a massive like garbage can. But I guess people just think most of those things are worthless, or they just don't have the need for it.
Yeah, we're really set up for a kind of a disposable culture, and moving on to the next sort of the next thing really quickly. But a lot of the stuff still has value, and if you do have the space to kind of hold on to it and eventually sort of organize it, a lot of it can still be really interesting and really great to engage with, particularly with film stuff. And that's one of the things that I really love about video stores and film collections, and just kind of preserving this stuff. And you know, a lot of films and a lot of film history is recovered through collectors and through things that people have just saved from being thrown out. And a lot of, you know, beautiful restored releases of films are because someone kept something, a projectionist or someone had some missing footage or that sort of thing. So I think there's real value to that. And it's one of the things that I'm really interested in terms of film collecting.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, especially with, at least, and this kind of segues to my next question for you, like, at university, like, in the U.S., they don't really, in film school, they don't really teach about physical media. It's, like, maybe a page out of, like, a chapter in, like, a lesson plan. And so I think, like, especially a lot of 16 and, like, just prints that are found and, like, deemed useless can be used in classes to teach people about physical media, especially students who haven't had the chance to, like, encounter it in their life, especially with, like, you know, 16 or 35. And I think that could be, like, at least I would love to provide stuff like that for students or just people who want to learn about it, because people want to learn about these things. It's just, like, the access to it that's hard, I think.
Yeah, I think it's very important, like, if we're going to value film culture and film history, and obviously we are, that's why we're here talking, I think it's really important in terms of education, like in film programs, to have at least some kind of a little bit of familiarity with film format and motion picture film, because and video, because of how it influences how the format influences the form of the film. So a lot of editing decisions, a lot of practical decisions of production are actually influenced by what the filmmaker is shooting on and how the film is going to be distributed, even where you know, edits are going to be, because they know, you know, we've got to have a cut somewhere approximately here for the real changeover or something like that, that in a lot of cases actually affects the film, but which, if you're not taught about the format, perhaps you wouldn't pick up on. So I think a lot of that stuff can be really valuable to have just at least a little bit of familiarity with.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Like, there's so much to be learned and, like, observed by, like, seeing things physically and, like, understanding that it is a physical art form as opposed to, like, it just happens. There's magically a film in front of you. Which I think that's pretty much most, like, people who aren't in technical areas of film, I think they just kind of, like, think that. They're like, oh, you just, like, project the film. You press a button and it's just on. And I'm like, no. No. So, yeah, I totally agree with that. Meredith, do you have something to say?
It's funny because, like, I've always said, like, I want to learn more about the technical side of film. And so, like, admittedly, I don't know a whole lot about all of that. So this is, when it comes to this kind of subject, I like to just, I sit back and observe, and I love listening to people talk about this because I love learning more about all of this. I've never projected anything, but my goal is to learn how to do that. And so, like I said, this is, like, super, always, like, super interesting to me. I did want to ask you, I know this was not on the list, but I had this come to my mind. Do you have anything, like, a movie on film that is your, like, do you have a prized possession, essentially? Is there something that you have that's, like, your favorite thing that you own on whatever, whether it's film or VHS? Is there anything that comes to mind that's, like, the Holy Grail, or something that you hope to come into possession of at some point?
Yeah, absolutely. So on 35mm, I've got a really nice print of Blue Velvet by David Lynch. So that in particular is a print that I'm very precious about, and I really love. And I've been lucky enough to actually see it projected, which is good, because a lot of my prints I haven't actually looked at yet. And then on 16, I've got a nice print with good color of Michael Powell's Peeping Tom, which is a really cool movie, and is a movie that sort of involves movies and cinema cameras, and so that's really, really beautiful thing to have. And then, like on tape, I've got a few things like Eyes of Fire, which I've also got on Laserdisc, which isn't really available on DVD or Blu-ray or really any other formats. And I've got, you know, a few New Zealand tapes, which are really kind of special. A few New Zealand films that aren't readily available elsewhere. So those are really nice to have on VHS.
Having Peeping Tom, I would give anything to see that projected. Just how beautiful that movie is. Like, I can't imagine seeing that on film. So I was really excited when you said that, genuinely.
I was just going to ask, like, what stock that Blue Velvet's on. Is it on LPP?
I actually don't know. So I'm not hugely technical. So I'm aware of the different types of stock in a little bit of a way. I've got a couple of books, but I haven't really read up on it. I haven't really checked that print to see what it's actually on. I don't know if it's a re-release or if it's an original print, but it's in very good condition. It's got good color. So that's
good.
That's really all that matters to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Technical stuff is like a rabbit hole. Like, it's, I feel like I'm always constantly figuring out like new technical terms and like what is what, and it just like sometimes it sticks and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, I'm still learning, and I think you set up a rewind at home recently. Like, mm-hmm. I just don't have any space at the moment. I don't have a rewind desk or anything set up. I'd really like to get my film stuff more organized. I'm trying to get smaller 16 projectors. I'd like to eventually get a portable 35 machine when I have more money.
Oh, me too.
And be able to actually project more often. At the moment, I'm mostly projecting 16 like outside in friends' backyards. I just don't have the throw in my living room to really project conveniently. I can, but I don't have a short throw lens. And it's very, very, it gets very, very hot in there when I'm running the projector. So I'm not super well set up at the moment to really do that. So perhaps when I move or reorganize things, then I'll be able to really look at my prints more and see what kinds of stock they're on and delve more into the nitty gritty of that. But at the moment, I'm just
really interested to hear. Yeah, I think I relate to that. Like, so I used to have a rewind set, that same rewind I've had for years. I had it set up in a dorm. It was like a studio door. Like, it was at my college. I had like 35 prints just laying around my dorm. And like, let me tell
that's
you,
it was beautiful dedication, Amelia. That's fantastic.
And I had like a giant thing of film renew on my desk, like all these chemicals around.
A film student at the time?
Yeah.
That's a real kind of aggressive power move to the other students. Like, just, you think you're serious?
Yeah.
Where's your film renew?
I know. Like, you think you're a film major? Guess again. No. Definitely. Like, I kind of have the space now to do it. So like, it's just about the space and like how to utilize it and a lot of shelves. I have to get a lot of shelves for these films. Like, it's a lot of like effort to organize, like, and then to be able to actually like look at the films is like a whole other ordeal. So
yeah, absolutely. I've got very tolerant flatmates who put up with all my film stuff that I've got sitting around at home. But yeah, I am in a limited kind of space situation. I'm at university now. But once I finish that, I imagine I'll sort out something better in terms of space. And one of my friends, actually, one of the unfortunate, things about COVID, happening, one of my friends is coming home and he's actually looking for some studio space to do video and film stuff in. So we might do something around there and be able to have more screenings, tie in with what he's doing. So yeah, further opportunities in the future, but now a little bit cramped. Perhaps focusing more on, video store stuff at the moment, I suppose.
So currently, what are you studying in university now that you bring that up?
I've gone to university after sort of, I guess, a gap decade or so. So I'm only in my second year. I don't know what that is. That sophomore or I'm in the second year of a Bachelor of Arts majoring in film. Yeah. So just doing that. So just doing a basic degree. Yeah.
I thought you were going to surprise us and say, like, I'm majoring in biology or something totally unrelated to film.
Oh, my goodness. I wish I had the concentration to do something other than film related stuff.
So what's your kind of end goal? What would you like to do professionally with your degree in the future?
I'm really not sure. I'm sort of at university at the moment trying to figure out what I want to do. I'm not sure that necessarily the degree will lead to anything specifically in the film field. It'd be great if it did, but it's a little bit limited in New Zealand in terms of, I don't know, like I'd be interested in archival work, for instance, but I think all those positions are kind of filled in New Zealand. I don't think anyone's sort of planning to move on anytime soon. But yeah, just generally film related stuff, I suppose, is what I would eventually see myself going into. Yeah.
That's so great. Like, literally, we're the same person. Are we the same person? I think we are.
You've got better glasses than me.
Well, you know, I like buying glasses for $10 on the internet, so.
You're like same.
And just buy like five different $10 glasses on the internet and hope that they make you like less depressed. And that's how to be Amelia. No, anyway.
I love that you can get the cheap ones online. It's accessorizing and I will not hear anything against that.
We don't stand for glasses hate on this podcast.
No.
So we're gonna kind of switch gears to talking about where you are right now in this moment, which is the video store. And so what would you describe as your current job right now?
I guess I'm a video store clerk, I guess is the nomenclature. So I just work here at the video store 2 days a week and serve customers and organize films. Mostly on DVD, a little bit on Blu-ray, occasionally on tape. And we just try and get films to people and facilitate that and look after the collection here. Oh, this is the Arrow Street Video Shop, by the way, in Wellington, New Zealand.
That's so awesome. Like, how would you say, you know, in America, we kind of have an idea of, like, how the video store is dying out here, but how would you say, like, you know, in Wellington, or you could say like New Zealand as a whole, like, what is the video store culture there like currently?
It's definitely tough. I mean, all the chain video stores have closed down, so there's still a few video stores around in New Zealand. Quite often people come in here and they're like, oh wow, you're the last video store in Wellington. We're like, no, there is another video store in Wellington, and we're probably the only business that defensively promotes the competition in that sense. Whereas very, like, no, there's Island Bay Video. You can go there as well, but don't. So video store culture in New Zealand, I guess now, is more focused around shops like us that are more more boutique, more personal, more focused around sort of having a kind of breadth of selection, you know, art house films and cult films, and New Zealand films, and sort of that personal touch. We're sort of hanging on through providing something that the Blockbusters and the other chains that we hear, Video Easy, United Video, Civic Video, didn't sort of cater to, and more a lot of sort of serious film interested people. So we kind of provide something that they didn't, and that the streaming services don't necessarily and just the depth of our catalog. Yeah, and a more curated approach to film, I suppose.
How long have you been working at the store, and how did you get into working there?
I've been working here for 2 years. I was a customer for quite a few years before that, and one day the owner, my boss Andrew, just called me up and was like, "Oh, we've got a vacancy at the store. You're always coming in here and talking about videos. Do you want to work here?" And I was like, "Sure." And yeah, it was just like that. And so I've been working here for, yeah, ever since, and it's been really enjoyable.
Would you say that, like, you have a good amount of customers coming in, or is it pretty quiet most of the time? Or what would you say that your, like, kind of busyness is usually, like, day to day?
Yeah, I mean, there's always people coming in. Certainly it's not like lines around the block. We've had to be kind of creative to survive in the current kind of retail environment. And the owner, Andrew, has come up with some really kind of, he's really had to retool the business continually over the last few years and find new ways to kind of attract people and to engage with our customers. And, you know, like we've shifted to sort of like a subscriber base. We've got a Patreon that people can support, and we've got different subscription models that people can sign up to. They can sign up to an annual subscription or a 3-month subscription or a number of different things to sort of support the store and keep us going. So really we're here from the good graces of our customers, yeah, who want to see us around.
The subscription-based method is really interesting because it's kind of like combining a new method with the streaming services, but with an old method of selling physical media in a store that people can physically walk into. And I think that's really great. Like, I think keeping things alive is like all about adaptability and how you can forge the two, you know, methods together to create something new and unique. And so it sounds like your boss is like really good at promoting the business like that and keeping it kind of alive.
Yeah. And some of the other video stores around New Zealand that are still going have adapted as well. There's a really neat video store down in the South Island of New Zealand in Christchurch called Alice's Video Wonderland, which we've got a nice relationship with them. And they actually, they are lucky enough to have more space in their shop than us. We're a very small shop. We're more like a little old, we look like a little old house. We're a little old villa with videos inside. Alice's down in Christchurch is a much more expansive building, and they've actually opened up cinemas, so they're now a video store / boutique cinema, so they've kind of moved into that space. And down in Lyttelton, which is actually just down the road from Christchurch in the South Island, there's a really enterprising guy who's actually opened a new video store up. He opened a video store last year called Dead Video, which rents movies, but also has a big focus on collectibles and sort of things that are adjacent to kind of modern film collecting culture and sort of like genre films and horror films. And a lot of people who are into those sort of things and who collect tapes also collect like figurines and T-shirts. And so they've moved into that kind of space. So it's really cool to see what people are doing and how people are sort of reinventing the idea of a video store.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see a lot of video stores, like you mentioned, becoming kind of like boutiques and then also becoming actual cinemas, like combining the two, very like physical, you know, experiences into one. And Movie Madness just recently got a screening room, and so they kind of went into that. And then I guess I'm thinking also of Alamo Draft House. They have a bar that's also a video store.
Vortex Video, yeah.
Yeah, it's right across, it's like 2 blocks away from me.
Oh, that's right so now. Cool.
But I've never gone inside it because, you you know, COVID.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, oh, man, that sucks.
But I'm hoping they're going to open it and stuff, so.
I actually had a whole holiday booked last year to go to Austin and to go to LA and possibly Seattle to look at cinemas and video store stuff. And then, you know, obviously the major tragedy of COVID is the loss of human life and the impact that's had on people. So my holiday is a very minor thing in that, but it's still very sad to me personally that so many of the things that I wanted to go see in Austin, LA closed. Like I really wanted to go see Eddie Brandt's Saturday Movie Matinee, that shop that was in LA, hopefully will reopen. Over in Austin, Vulcan Video unfortunately closed down. And I was going to check out the Alamo Draft Houses and a lot of stuff like that. But there's still beautiful stuff that's going to be opening. Vidiots in LA are going to be opening theater / video store. Yeah. So that's wonderful to see. Yeah.
I would really like to go to Scarecrow Video,
Oh my goodness! Yeah, I would love to go to Scarecrow Video. They're amazing.
It's like a pilgrimage. It's like a pilgrimage. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't that far from Seattle, which is sad because, you know, Portland's like a 2-hour drive or so. But I've never been to Seattle. Like, I'm not that far from it, but I've never been there. So, I mean, I would love to see all, like, the cinemas and, like, the video stores that are still around there.
Okay, I didn't realize that there are a lot of video stores still in Seattle. I might go there at some point for my friend lives there and she's getting married and now that you said that, I am going to do my best to visit a lot of those places when I'm there. So I had no idea, though, for some reason, that was like a hub.
Yeah. And there's the Seattle Underground. I'm sorry, I'm going on a complete tangent, but that just seems amazing. There's a whole underground section of the city that's preserved in Seattle where they built on top of the old buildings. I guess it's tangentially movie related because it's featured in Kolchak, The Night Strangler, I think it's the second of the Kolchak TV movies.
It is, yes.
So that's an amazing thing. You know, you can tour something from Kolchak and you can go to Scarecrow Video. So Seattle sounds really, I think there's like a Cinerama Dome or something there as well. Oh, no, an IMAX theater or something there that's really big. So that sounds terrific. Sorry, I was just thinking, in terms of sort of the value of the video store in the age of streaming, I think it's really important to have access to a wide range of films that aren't sort of divided up by studio and kind of corporate ownership, and having access to a breadth of classic cinema. Like I don't quite fully know the situation in the US. You guys have got a lot more options in terms of streaming than us, but the streamers here in New Zealand are pretty piss poor when it comes to classic films. You know, anything sort of before the 1980s. And so, you know, here at the store, we have all that kind of stuff. People can come and see classic films and have access to them. So one of the things that concerns me about film culture going forward is just the kind of the Disney vault concept of locking up films when they're not in release and studios not really giving as much care and attention to older films that aren't Citizen Kane. So it's really beautiful to have a video store and to have that collection and to just have more films than streaming services have, at least here in New Zealand. I mean, we've only got like 28,000 titles. Scarecrow Video, I think they've got something like 200,000 or something ridiculous. So it's just a whole breadth of material that people can have access to that streaming services just don't. I mean, I think most streamers have like 3,000, 5,000, 8,000 films maybe. So you have to sign up to a lot of services to really get access to a breadth of cinema history. And that's an area that I hope some video stores can hold on to, or perhaps, you know, perhaps we can imagine a new form of a video store, some kind of archive, a library. It's a real shame that movies have gone to this kind of ownership dictated model in a way that, say, books haven't. There's kind of an acceptance with literature that we, or the state should preserve literature and should fund libraries, and that people should have a wide access to a variety of literature. I mean, imagine if you could only subscribe to Penguin Books or Random House, you know, one at a time. And if you wanted to read something that they didn't publish, you would have severe access trouble, you know? And that's the situation that we're in with films and streaming. So while there are wonderful conveniences to it, there's a depth that's kind of being lost. And that's something that's wonderful to see preserved. And that is just so amazing about a place like Scarecrow Video, that they're preserving so much stuff and a lot of obscure stuff that you just can't get access to otherwise. And that's what we're doing here at Arrow Video in our own small way as well.
Yeah, that's like a really important point. And I think that also with video stores, you know, like you said, you have multiple formats. Well, like some films just never go to a different format. Like they just get basically stuck and frozen in one type of format that was released. Like some films are just not on TV. They're just on tape. And you're not going to be able to get that from a streaming service, obviously, because they're not going to have any interest in preserving it, or, you know, they're interested in preserving certain titles and not some. So it's nice that like a whole, you know, decade and generation of certain filmmakers are just like getting recognized by someone walking into a video store and renting a random title and just like being open to exploring new types of films, as opposed to having someone curate everything for you on a streaming service, or, you know, telling them you can only watch this for a certain amount of time and then we're taking it off the service and like, sorry. But, you know, if you go to a video store, you can just say, hey, can I like borrow this again, or can you renew this, or can you like put this on hold for, you know, it's like you have access. You just have to walk in and go get it, which I guess maybe a price too high for some people. But yeah.
I was going to say, I really miss, like, I was in high school when the two video stores in our town closed, because I'm from a town of about 20,000 people. And my family, we used to go to the locally owned one, which looking back on that now, it was between the locally owned one and Blockbuster. And I'm so glad that my family went to the locally owned one, because I have so many good memories. And it was very specific to, you know, just how they had it set up. And it was so different than just kind of your normal corporate one. But I was going to say, I hate, like, looking back on that, I really miss going in and being able to physically hold copies of movies, and you know, I just know as I'm older, I miss that. Streaming is, it's nice to an extent because it is accessible, but I would give anything to like go back and go every Friday or Saturday night to a video store and to just, you know, go through the movies on the shelves and, you know, ask the people working there, like, what do you recommend to me? Not to go on a whole tangent about that, because I'm just a really nostalgic person. But with saying that, that's why I think it's so cool that places like this exist, like there still are video stores. You know, I was going to say, it really makes me nostalgic and miss the ones that, you know, locally we had here, because we don't, in my area, we don't have any of those anymore. So I think that that's really awesome that you guys are still keeping these in existence.
Yeah, it's really great to talk to people in person about movies, and that sort of isn't necessarily getting replaced. And a lot of the kind of, as video stores close and, you know, get supplanted by streaming services, just some of the valuable details sort of aren't getting replaced, like a lot of that access to back catalog stuff, even though there is some terrific stuff out there if you subscribe to enough services. But that whole personal connection, talking to people about films, meeting people who like films in person, is perhaps not so much getting another outlet. And also just, you know, stuff like DVD special features. Like, streaming services tend to go very bare bones for the most part. You're not getting, like, commentaries and stuff are dying off, which is not the end of the world. There's a lot of nice stuff people are doing on YouTube, a lot of film essays coming out, but yeah, a lot of that kind of content by filmmakers that was kind of a feature of the DVD era isn't getting replicated in the streaming era. And that, yeah, that kind of corporate neglect, I guess, is creeping in with a lot of film catalogs from some of the big studios, where it's very bare bones releases. Sometimes it's not even a really great new scan, because there isn't kind of the sales pitch. With streaming, it's kind of take it or leave it. You know, you can watch this classic film, but we're not really going to put a lot of effort into restoring it, you know, as perhaps they would for a theatrical or a like a big Blu-ray release. There are those aspects that kind of concern me a little bit going forward. And it's not all doom and gloom, but we just have to sort of fight for those things and quality and availability of film. Yeah, and that breadth of kind of material.
Yeah, I definitely think that it's interesting that people say that streaming is more accessible sometimes, because, well, one of the reasons that the Blockbuster in Bend is still around is because people have poor Wi-Fi connection there. Like, they have poor internet. And so, like, it is an easy alternative for them to just go to Blockbuster, as opposed to people who live in bigger cities who are just like, well, I have high speed internet and I can, you know, use streaming, and like, it's high quality and it works for me. But a lot of rural areas, you know, don't have that luxury of having that, you know, high tech environment to be able to stream things. So having, like, a lot of people still have VCRs, like Blu-ray players, like DVD players, who live in those areas, because, like, that is how they consume film. So, you know, it's nice that, like, they still have that option, as opposed to having to be, like, forced to kind of put up with, you know, corporate, like, forcefulness of, like, you need to, like, you know, get better internet, or you need to, like, have, like, the means to do this, or we're just going to leave you behind. So, yeah, which is why I'm surprised, Meredith, that you don't have, like, that Hannibal still doesn't have, like, a video rental store.
Yeah, that's, you know, and that's a really good point, too. And it's, you know, it's funny, because I had made that comment about, you know, it's in ways it's more accessible. And, you know, I say that from a perspective of, like, I'm very fortunate that I have the internet. Like, internet's good enough, you know, that I can run streaming. I've never had issues. And it's a really good point you bring up, because, like I said, I kind of take it for granted sometimes, because it works for me. In my town, that's another really good point too. Because I mean, I know people who even live on the outskirts of Hannibal, my hometown, and, you know, anywhere kind of rural around the town. And I know a lot of people do have issues with, like, with broadband and really slow internet. And so that's a good point. Like I said, I was trying to think back, and both of our video stores went out of business relatively the same, close, I think they were within a year or two of each other. And I remember, I have memories of, it was like my freshman year in high school, that the local one, which was called the Great River Video Store, when it went out of business, because I remember going and looking through everything when they were selling things off, they were about to go out of business. And so that would have been like 2008, 2009, which is crazy to me. It's been that long. And then Blockbuster was, like I said, I think it was within a year or two of Great River going out. But yeah, it's just like that. It's just so rare now for me in this area to see anything, a video store. It's, like I said, it's basically like a relic. And I don't know. It's just, it's weird. I don't know. It's just, it's really weird. Yeah.
I had one minor question. So you were mentioning earlier when we weren't recording, Dave, about the difference between the different colors of cases for tapes, like red, or I want to know what that is. What does it mean?
I don't know, but there's a VHS collectors group that's very active on Facebook in the UK, and people there seem to know a lot about what color cases different video distributors used, and some people are very pedantic about it. You'd really have to ask them. There are some people that are just terrific experts on particularly the VHS era of and Betamax era of home video distribution. There's an amazing guide that I bought off a guy in Australia who published this book that contains a list of every video release that was made in Australia between in like a 25-year period or something. He catalogued every VHS release. And he packaged this beautiful book up with a couple of essays and all these old Australian video store and video sales ads, and just a remarkable amount of dedication, and something that I really wish we had here. It's crazy that this thing that was sort of everyone's cultural interaction, like video rental, that was sort of what every family kind of did on a Friday night or something, is sort of disappeared overnight, this whole industry. And there's not, in New Zealand at least, much of a catalogue of that, like who distributed which films, which film releases maybe were censored, just that kind of information about how people engaged with films for, 25 or 30 years. Luckily in the US and Australia and the UK, people have catalogued that a little bit better. There's a lot more information, and that stuff is really valuable to cinema studies in terms of how people came to films, how people engaged with films, how they were received by the public. I think, Amelia, possibly before we started recording, you mentioned video nasties in the UK. And obviously that affected how a whole generation of people in the UK interacted with films, and also has far-reaching consequences in terms of state censorship and film distribution. All that stuff's really interesting. And luckily in the UK it's been catalogued. Whereas in New Zealand it's more sort of vague memories of people. But I mean, we had... not to the same extent as the UK, but we had a censorship scene here as well. There are a lot of films that are still technically banned in New Zealand, which probably wouldn't be banned under current censorship guidelines, but simply were at the time, like Michael Winner's The Sentinel. I was trying to find a copy of the other day, and it was never released in New Zealand. It didn't pass censorship for some reason or another. A lot of films which, Cannibal Holocaust, you can find on YouTube, and we had a confrontation a few years ago with the chief censor in New Zealand, who was still sort of in the 1950s and was saying, I think most people engage with films through the cinema or television, and he just had no idea. He lost his job actually a little while after that, but he was saying that, and at this panel discussion at our local film archive, and he just had no idea. And I brought up Cannibal Holocaust on YouTube, and I was like, well, that's technically banned in New Zealand, and anyone can find it on YouTube. So the censorship, which unfortunately we still labor under here at the store, a very kind of rigid and revenue gathering based method of censorship, which unfortunately, in terms of other countries like the US and the UK, a lot of films just never got released in New Zealand because of the classification costs, because to distribute a film here, you have to pay to get it classified, which is still something of a barrier to getting stuff in, and means that a lot of stuff just didn't come here. And unfortunately, in comparison to streaming services, which are not as heavily legislated, so they've been able to show anything really. And now just recently, some legislation's passed to allow streaming services here in New Zealand to self-classify. So they've really just, it's a real shame that legislation just hasn't kind of caught up with accessibility, which has been a barrier to getting stuff here. So all those questions about censorship and classification and how people access films, I think, and just media material in general are always relevant. Yeah.
So, and I have a kind of a question. So what are you not allowed to carry at the store per, you know, censorship? Like, are you not allowed to have like an adult section, or like how does it work really?
So we don't have an adult section. We never have. We've got a few kind of like blue movies in our cult, a very small cult erotic section, like stuff that has kind of, I guess, particular historical value. But so there's not a lot of stuff that's banned these days. It's mostly an issue of simply the classification cost to to actually get films. This is a bad example because this is a very old tape, but we have to submit something to the classification office, and then they, which has a review cost, which is often kind of not really worthwhile in terms of the return of actually renting the item, and then they issue a sticker which says that this is R18 or whatever, which is one of our ratings here, and so it's more a cost thing. It's more that you have to pay the film classification office to allow a film to be distributed, and unfortunately that closes us off to some films and to some foreign television, but we do what we can to make as much of that stuff available as we can, it doesn't affect us too much these days, practically, because sometimes we just ignore it. but it's just really stupid and just really indicative of the law not really being in tune with how people are actually accessing material. Because obviously, if you really want to find a lot of stuff, you can just find it on the internet, and that's not classified, strangely, in the same way that a physical media product or a cinema release is. So it can be a little bit heavy-handed here in New Zealand in terms of, telling adults what they can and can't see. And historically, some of the censorship has been, I would say, kind of snobbish. I can't think of a better word at the moment. Like the Elijah Wood remake of Maniac, I forget exactly what year that came out. Maybe it was 2011 or somewhere around there. That was one film that was banned here by the chief censor. But after some negotiation, our major film festival, the New Zealand International Film Festival, was able to get an exemption for the film to play at the festival. And the exemption also said it could also be screened at universities. So there's kind of, and there were a few other films that had that same exemption where they were banned but could be screened at the film festival or at universities. So there's kind of an implicit assumption there that certain audiences, who the kind of people who go to a film festival, go to university, more educated and are more intelligent and better able to access that material than a general audience, which is really condescending, and which is a debate that I had with one of our former censors around this. And he said, it's about responsible access to material and mitigating harm through making sure that informed audiences are the only ones who are seeing this material. And just he talked around it, but there was just this implicit assumption that that people who are university educated or who go to a festival are just a better class of people, which I just think is nonsense, and is just part of the censorship culture here, which I want to emphasize is not very heavy these days. The classification office is moving forward more to an education model and very slowly starting to move with the times, but it's still just very kind of very condescending. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think that the U.S. has anything like that where we have to pay for classification.
No, we sort of followed on from the UK model because we're a Commonwealth country. You guys have the MPAA, the industry model, which has its own kind of problems with it, but yeah. Luckily doesn't stop stuff from coming out on home video, which is or any other form, which is wonderful. It's just kind of an economic pressure with cinemas.
If you wanted to get a film like classified, pay for it to have in your store, I mean, does that just come out of the pocket of the owner of the video store?
Yeah, it does, unfortunately. So Andrew does get a bunch of stuff classified, so that we can give our customers access to it, and that's really just out of wanting the store to have a breadth of material, to have some of those foreign films which don't otherwise get distribution here. But it's, you know, the actual cost in terms of what it costs to get it classified, I don't know the figure off the top of my head, but and then in terms of what we get back in rental revenue really doesn't actually make it worth it. It's just because he wants to play ball and have that available there for our customers, but it's a silly system. In New Zealand, a film can be classified for theatrical distribution and still has to be classified separately for, say, having the DVD available. It's like separate classification costs. So it's a really clunky, outdated system.
I really want one of those stickers on the that says 18 on it. I really love one.
Oh, yep, we can arrange that. I'm sure I've got a spare one somewhere at home that I can see you. Yeah.
I don't know why I want that, but I just love that kind of stuff. Like Movie Madness sells enamel pins with the I think it's the cougar, the British Columbia.
Yeah. The restricted.
I have they sell enamel pins with that. And so I kind of find like rating systems very fascinating, and like I don't know why, that's like a really dorky thing to say, but I don't know, man. Just watch, like learning about video nasties and like Mary Whitehouse and all the like crazy moral crusades.
Boo
Mary Whitehouse.
Sucks.
Yeah.
One of my friends is he's a film producer now. Ant Timpson, who made the film Come to Daddy with Elijah Wood, which you should really check out if you haven't seen already, is a really nice thriller film. But he, for a long time, he's done amazing work giving people access to films here in New Zealand. He ran a film festival for many years called the Incredibly Strange Film Festival that would bring in a lot of cult movies and genre films that otherwise wouldn't find distribution here and would show them in cinemas. And that he still does. It's been folded in to the larger New Zealand International Film Festival as a category. He also runs these 24-hour movie marathons once a year in a cinema, a beautiful cinema that his brother owns, which shows just over 24 hours. We watch about 12, 13, 14 movies back to back. A lot of them on 35mm and a lot of just cult and rare stuff. Occasionally even prints where he's only got the only copy of the film in the world, stuff like that. And so for many years running the Incredibly Strange Film Festival and just releasing other films separately, he ran afoul of censorship, of customs. Customs once raided his house and confiscated a bunch of tapes and stuff. And he ran afoul of this guy who I can't remember. It was like it wasn't called the Concerned Citizens Brigade, but it was something like the Concerned Citizens Brigade. It was like this very right-wing religious censorship group that kept just trying to get films banned and legally challenging them. This guy would do these letter writing campaigns and get screenings interrupted, and took this distributor, Ant, to court a couple of times. And I found out recently, this dude, he's kind of, I think the organization's folded, their website's still up. But I found out this guy lives on my street. He lives like down the road from me. Like the organization, whatever it's called, is on their website, their address is listed. And I don't know, I almost think about throwing toilet paper on his house when I walk past, you know. It's just so it's not really going on now, but they're, and not quite on the scale of like Mary Whitehouse and the Video Nasties in the UK, but we did, yeah, to a lesser extent, sort of have our own version of that in New Zealand, our own censorship battles, our own Mary Whitehouses, and that the kind of scars of that sort of conflict are still going on today, where a lot of stuff is just, for nonsense reasons, is still technically banned here. And a lot of people, films that people just haven't seen because they were never distributed here. Yeah.
Yeah, I think to draw a parallel, it's crazy that, like, you know, those things that you mentioned happened, you know, a decade or two ago. But, like, when I read about American, like, film history and, like, you know, obviously there was an obscenity law and, you know, people would get raided. But that was, like, in the 60s. That was, like, when Russ Meyer was, like, making films and, like, getting the projectionists who were running his films, they were getting, like, you know, basically arrested or, like, getting, like, charged, like, with a fine or something. Not, like, you know, 10 years ago. At least that I haven't heard of. Who knows? You know, America's fucking crazy, but who knows? But, yeah, just, like, the comparison, like, but I'm glad that, you know, they're slowly kind of moving towards less focus on censorship and, like, classification. But I think it's really awful that, you know, they're like, well, streaming services don't really need a class, you know, they could self-serve. It's like, fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, fuck them. It's very silly. We're adapting, we're rolling with it, but it was very condescending when the new law changes were made. And it's very similar to what's happened here in New Zealand in terms of other large non-film related companies, like there was a big thing where Uber wasn't following the laws that taxi drivers have to follow here. You have to get a special license to show that you're a safe driver for carrying passengers, and it's like $500. And Uber figured out that they could actually just have their drivers not get that license and just pay the fines, and it was less money than if they actually bought the licenses. So it's very similar to that with streaming, where the streaming services just were flouting the law in terms of classification, or sort of there was a gap in the law where it didn't specifically say, you know, it said television, video, cinema. It didn't really specifically say streaming or internet television. So they were just, they were showing things. There was a lot of controversy around the series on Netflix, I think 13 Reasons Why, which involves self-harm and suicide. So that sparked off a lot of controversy here, and which led to this law change. But unfortunately, the law change was like, oh, Netflix doesn't really want to go through the classification process. So we will change the law to make it easier for them, rather than we will change. I mean, ultimately, I think our classification laws are kind of silly, and we should all be able to self-classify and just sort of say whether, you know, say what kind of, maybe have a label warning what kind of content is in the film, in case there's something that could be triggering or which could be, you know, inappropriate for children. But if we're going to have a classification system, it really should just be one rule for everyone over all distribution methods. It shouldn't be kind of, oh, these large streaming services don't really want to do what everyone else is doing, so we will change the law to make it easier for them. They can self-classify, or, you know, or in the case of Uber, which is, you know, obviously not film, but the law was changed to make passenger licenses cheaper, to make it easier for Uber to comply. So it was sort of like, oh, they're breaking the law, so we'll change the law so they're not breaking the law anymore, because it's kind of awkward telling off large corporates. And that's kind of the attitude in New Zealand. We actually changed our labor laws to please Warner Brothers. So the government actually changed the labor laws that film workers could not be employees. They could only be contractors. They could not unionize, and they could not protest for better conditions. And that's the only industry in New Zealand that is not allowed to unionize. And it is specifically because the government wanted the Hobbit films to be produced here. So there's a real history in New Zealand of when corporate money is waved around, we actually change the law to better accommodate them and make things easier for them, which is not great.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's laughable that they're like, Netflix needs help. We need to change the whole. Like,
Yeah. It's kind of funny when you actually think about it that way. It wasn't pitched that way. It was like, oh, we're bringing it more into line. It was like, yeah, we're just giving them a license to do what they're already doing and pay a small kind of nominal fee, to do that.
They have money to pay for classifications.
Like, yeah, exactly.
They're not struggling to pay the bills.
Yeah, so like Wellington here in New Zealand is known as a film city, and there is some really great stuff going on, some really great films being made, and you know, New Zealand is known for its landscapes, which were kind of promoted in the Lord of the Rings films, but yeah, I just want people to know that there is a lot of great beauty here. There is a lot of really cool stuff coming here. There are some really cool positive things going on in New Zealand, but we also have kind of the problems that other countries have, and that carries on through our film culture as well. There are kind of bullshit issues here as well.
Disney has a lot of bullshit rules here that they like to follow, the locking the vault. It's all going to be in the Disney vault. You can't touch it. I want to go in that vault. I know it's not real, but it'd be great.
Walt Disney's head. I don't know. I think that's a myth, but.
Oh my God. This is a complete tangent, but right next door to where the guy who ran the sort of New Zealand version of the anti film distribution censorship people, where he lives on my street, next door to him is where on Google Maps it says like the New Zealand branch of the Australasian Cryogenics Association, and there's a whole story where the guy who lived there was cryogenically frozen. He wasn't actually cryogenically frozen at his house, unfortunately. That would be a much better story, but it still comes up on Google, and I think if you call the number, you get a very confused lady who is like, what? Oh, the frozen man, yes. And so it's not really interesting to anyone but me, but I find it really interesting that this kind of moral crusader lives next door to this guy who was cryogenically frozen, and they're all just down the road from me. It's a
I know where I'm going on my way to your house.
That's amazing.
I have some tourist places now to visit.
It's a nice neighborhood. It's also in the same neighborhood. Peter Jackson shot probably his most fun film, Braindead, just down the road from my house. Yeah. So wonderfully, a lot of the locations from that film haven't changed since 1988 or 9 or whenever he shot that. I'm totally getting the year wrong on that one. But yeah, whenever Braindead was shot about 30 years ago, a lot of the locations are still around and very recognizable in my neighborhood.
So what you're saying is your neighborhood's popping off.
It sure is. Yeah. There was also Temuera Morrison, who people might know from playing Boba Fett in Star Wars. He shot a thriller film with one of the actors from Cheers, which is like a chase film, and that film has a chase scene that drives through my neighborhood. So that's very exciting. It's called Never Say Die, 1987. And there's another film from the early 90s, I think like 93, a film called Chicken, which is terrible, but has a great VHS cover. And that's shot in my neighborhood as well. So that's a New Zealand gem you probably won't find overseas, because it's not even very popular here. It's about a singer who promotes a fried chicken restaurant and then fakes his own death in order to spike record sales. It's a really bad movie, but that's another beautiful Wellington film history tidbit.
That's amazing. Well, if I'm ever in New Zealand, like, I totally want to come see your store.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's heaps of film stuff down here if you're ever down this way. Yeah.
And for the audience who's going to be listening to this, like, I would love if, you know, people subscribe to your Patreon for your video store, because, like, you know, obviously I'm not in New Zealand, like, I'm not anywhere close to New Zealand, so, like, it'd be really cool to support you guys, even if I can't physically come in the store. So, like, I'll definitely be subscribing to your Patreon.
If anyone's crazy enough to do that, I don't have it in front of me at the moment, but just Google Aro Video Patreon. That's A-R-O. And you should be able to find it. We've got a couple of podcasts up as well, if anyone's crazy enough to listen to that. We've got Back to the Disc Player, which is on hiatus at the moment, but which features interviews specifically with Aro Video customers who are part of our Adopt a Movie program. So another way that people can support a store is they can actually adopt a film that's within the store, and they get a little certificate and a little label put on the film itself, acknowledging that they've adopted it, and free rentals of that title for life. So in the podcast Back to the Disc Player, my boss Andrew interviews people about their love of film who've adopted items in our store. Some really interesting characters on that. And he's also got another podcast, I think, called Cinema Without Pictures, which is all about film soundtracks.
Oh, that's so cool. I love that. We'll definitely take a listen to that.
We'll share that on our social media as well. We'll go ahead and link that for anybody who is interested.
And do you have anything you want to promote, self-promotion, any self-promotion you'd like to do?
No, I think that's it. Yeah, just if you're interested in our store, we've got a website. If you search Aro Video, I don't know, I don't really know how we'd be of interest to people overseas, unless they're hunting for New Zealand films, in which case we might be able to help you. Either if you're after a New Zealand film, we may have it in stock for sale, or we may be able to point you in the direction of where you can find that title.
Sweet.
Awesome.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for talking with us. And
thank you. Yeah, it's been great.
I honestly could talk longer, but I won't. You know, to spare our audience. Sometimes I wonder, do they actually want to listen to us talk about things for like an hour and 30 minutes? Well, I guess some people do, but I'm having so much fun regardless of everybody else. But yeah, I thank you so much for coming. And you know, so far Meredith and I only have one other thing planned in the future. We're going to do a Kolchak podcast.
Oh, that is so cool. Oh, I love Kolchak.
Yeah, we're gonna do a Kolchak podcast about two of his two films, and then also we're gonna probably talk a little bit about some of the episodes in the show. And hey, if you want to come on that podcast and talk about Kolchak with us, feel free.
Oh, yeah, sure thing. Yeah, I'd love to.
Because I've only seen the show. I haven't seen the movies, so it'll be interesting to...
I didn't realize that. Okay, that's going to be a treat. I love this.
You didn't realize you were doing a Kolchak podcast?
Oh, my God. Okay, no. I did, because there was... what was it? It was inspired by Amelia... What did you tweeted something recently about how you wanted to own Kolchak on like 16 millimeter or something. I think it was something like that. So I texted her. I was inspired by that. Texted her and I was like, I don't know. I said something and I was like, oh my God, I love Kolchak. Can we like do something on the podcast about it? But I don't think I realized that you hadn't seen the movies before. I totally forgot I did know.
Oh, and hey, if I could just say to anyone listening, if you have a video store near you, definitely check it out, because there's some bound to be some really valuable stuff, some interesting films that you wouldn't discover otherwise through streaming or however else. So definitely go in there to your local video store, talk to those people. If you don't have a video store in your area, still check out what video stores are around in your country, because quite often they'll have interesting merchandise or podcasts. Sometimes live streams can be really interesting as a way to turn you onto obscure films that are maybe only out there in physical format that you might be able to seek out. And sometimes video stores sell films. So just have a look around what's around in your area in terms of video stores or independent cinemas, just anything independent to do with film. You can find some really beautiful gems. I've just discovered Gold Ninja Video recently, which is a label that distributes mostly stuff that's available in the public domain that you can probably find on the internet. But what they do is they package it along with like little essays and lots of special features and commentaries and stuff that you wouldn't otherwise find. So you get a lot of context around films. I won't go on, but yeah, stuff like that is just really amazing out there.
Yeah, support your mom and pops, your parents, and the independent video stores. So totally, you should support independent cinemas. You know, as being someone who worked in an independent cinema, like it really is about like the patronage, and like that's how you survive unless you're become a nonprofit, like some video stores have had to do. Thank you guys for listening. Dave, thanks for coming and talking with us. And please, if you would like to talk about Kolchak with us, yes, we will make it happen.
I also want to say thank you. And for those listening, again, if you have not found us on social media by now, you should go find us and just look us up by the Goldwyn Girls or the Goldwyn Girls podcast. We are very active on Twitter and also on Instagram. So please do visit us. We like to post polls. I think that's probably our favorite thing to do by now. And also you can find us on our website at thegoldwyngirls.wordpress.com as well.
Cool. Well, we hope to see everyone soon. And thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.
I don't care what the weatherman says, when the weatherman says it's raining, you'll never hear me complaining, I'm certain the sun will shine.
I don't care how the weather vane points, when the weather vane points to gloomy, it's gotta be sunny to me, when your eyes look into mine.
Jeepers, creepers, where'd you get those creepers? Jeepers, creepers, where'd you get those eyes?
Gosh, y'all, get up. How'd they get so lit up? Gosh, y'all, get up. How'd they get that size?
Golly gee.
When you turn those heaters on.
Woe is me.
Got to put my cheaters on.
Jeepers.